Thank you for listening to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. This is real sports talk for the real sports fan. And I definitely appreciate all you real sports fans who are listening right now. If you're a team iPhone, please go to your iTunes store and search The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hit that subscribe button for me and also give us that 5-star rating, that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That 5-star rating will definitely be appreciated. If you're a team Android, you can go to podomatic.com. That's podomatic.com and subscribe on there. You also can subscribe on the CastBox app, or you can go to blogtalkradio.com/radioAFS. That's blogtalkradio.com/radioAFS and catch us on Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 2:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or just add it, Sports Arena Net. You can go there and catch us on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern or 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're everywhere, baby. We are everywhere. And we have a great show lineup for you guys today. Have a special guest on the line with us. I have TK Goldsmith, host of the hit podcast, I Need a Mulligan. How you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, man, no problem, no problem. Definitely a fan of the podcast, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show. And thanks. What I like to do is I like to have my audience, you know, all 36 people. I like to
That's double what I have. So
I like to have them get to know our guest and get to love our guest the way I do. So I'm just ask you a few questions. Like, first, I just want to have you just give a brief history of who you are and tell us about yourself.
Okay, yeah. Grew up in Nebraska, played basketball at a small NAIA school called Peru State College here in Nebraska. Went and got my degree in physical education and coaching, and taught for three, four years and coached, and then got married in 2007, and then we moved around quite a bit for my wife's job. So I ended up getting out of the teaching thing and kind of did some sales and different aspects, but. Long story short, we moved back to Nebraska this past June, and I've been doing sales roles for the last few years, and kind of wanted to get back into talking sports and coaching and different things. So I was kind of looking around at different things. I was thinking about maybe doing a blog, and then I kind of ran across the podcast thing, and honestly, I didn't even know what a podcast was, and I kind of ran across it, and I was like, hey, I want to do that. And nowadays, it's so easy to start a podcast that I was like, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. And that's kind of how I Need a Mulligan came about, just kind of thinking of some ideas and different things that I wanted to do, and that's where it came about.
Okay, that's definitely dope, man. And of course, I caught the fact that you played basketball. I was a basketball player too. Now, I didn't play in college. I wasn't good enough. But if you had to compare your style of play to an NBA player, past or present, who would you compare it to?
Oh man, a lot of people call me like Dirk Nowitzki. I kind of have that style of game. A little bit taller for like a shooting guard or a three, at least at the level that I played at. I'm 6'4", so a shooting guard at 6'4", NAIA, I was probably a little bit taller for that position. But slash to the basket, could shoot the three. So I still try to do it from time to time. A little bit older, don't have the vert that I used to. I got to be a little bit more creative in the style of game that I play. But I play a little bit on lunch, but that's about it.
Okay, I definitely feel you there. I'm getting to that crafty age as well, where everything.
You gotta use that brain, man.
Yeah, definitely. A lot more pump fix in my game now. A lot more pump.
What about you? You got a game that you kind of emulate?
Yeah, when I was younger, probably a lot more Dwayne Wade. Okay. I would say somebody like that, because I was going to the hole, okay. And I had hops back then, so I was trying to dunk on people. Okay. Now I would say more of maybe a J.R. Smith. Like, how J.R. Smith could drop 41 one day?
Yeah.
And then the next day he'd go 0 for 11?
Yeah.
that's me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's certain times people will watch me and they'd be like, man, you should have played in college. You're really good. And then the next day they'd be like, okay, we see why you didn't play in college. So that's definitely my game.
Good stuff.
All right. So now for the I Need a Mulligan podcast, for the people who are looking for new podcasts to listen to, what can they expect when they subscribe to your podcast?
Yeah, we, you know, when I was thinking about something to do, I kind of wanted to do, you know, something that was unique or kind of out of the ordinary of other sports podcasts. And what I do when I kick off an episode, I feature, you know, some sort of like bourbon, scotch, or a craft beer at the beginning. And the main reason why I did that, a couple different reasons, I thought, you know, it's a good way to kind of get different advertisements at the beginning, and I'm still talking about it throughout the podcast. You know, it's not, you're talking about your advertisement at the beginning and then you don't hear about it the rest of the podcast. So I decided to do that. And then also, I mean, if you're watching a sporting event or you're going to play a round of golf, I mean, what's better than, you know, drinking an adult beverage? So I thought it went hand in hand. And then, you know, once I feature that, then I go into talking sports and some of the topics that we talk about on I Need a Mulligan is NFL, college football, NBA, college basketball. I'm really passionate about the UFC. And then, of course, with Mulligan in the title, we got to talk about golf. And as the golf season kind of ramps up here, we'll probably, you know, it'll be a little bit more golf heavy than it has been, you know, over the last couple months. But, you know, that's the sporting events that we talk about. And then at the end of every podcast, I have something that's called I Need a Mulligan Moment of the Podcast, where we talk about second chances, do-overs. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's serious, just kind of depends on the topic.
Yeah, I definitely love the I Need a Mulligan Moment of the Podcast. I caught hard in the last one, you know, you did for Grayson Allen.
Oh yeah.
Yes. He's definitely, he probably needs a few mulligans with on.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So for Grayson Allen, say if you were an NBA team and Grayson Allen is an NBA talent, he's probably more of a, like a second round guy, somebody you could probably come as a bench role player guy. Would you pass on a Grayson Allen because of his, you know, the things he's been doing on the court and somewhat off the court?
You know, I go back and forth. I think, you know, if you look at his game right now and kind of how it's evolved maybe over the last 6 months to a year, I think with all this controversy, it's really hurt his game a little bit. You know, he just doesn't seem as confident as he was. And I think with Coach K being out and having the back surgery and having that leader over there, I think that's really hurting him too. But here's what I will say about it. You know, I coached at the high school level for 8 years. And, you know, I think it's all about the coach and whether or not they want to take on that responsibility or they want to take on that challenge. Because for me, as a coach, you know, I've had some kids in the past where they've been passionate about what they do, but they might teeter towards kind of that, you know, off the rails mentality. And if the coach is comfortable dealing with that and trying to rein that in, you know, I think the talent's there. So, you know, if there's a GM out there that's looking at him, I would definitely make sure that you sit down with your coaching staff and make sure that they're 100% on board to take on maybe the mental side of his game, not necessarily the physical side.
Okay, yeah, it's very important because if the mental side isn't there, the physical side isn't going to matter.
Right, exactly.
So, no, definitely there. Now, you mentioned that on the I Need a Mulligan podcast, you usually start off talking about an adult beverage that you're featuring that weekend. So, how did that idea come to fruition for you? Did you always, you know, become one of maybe a connoisseur of these type of things, or is it something that came maybe later in life? How did this idea come to you?
Honestly, I like to fucking drink. So, you know, and you know, I was just thinking that when I wanted to do the podcast too, you know, when I first started out, it was just kind of me by myself behind the microphone. There wasn't really anybody involved, but the vision of the podcast, I want to have more guests on and kind of, you know, sit in the same room and, you know, just have a conversation, you know, like you're having a conversation over beers, you're watching a game, and, you know, that's kind of where that came along too. And you know, I definitely like to drink my bourbon, scotch, and beer. I'm drinking Tomatin right now. I featured it on the last last podcast. It's a single malt Scotch whiskey, and I'm drinking that right now. I love it. I mean, if you're a Scotch drinker and you're a Scotch drinker on a budget, because my podcast hasn't taken off either. You know, I'm still waiting to get paid on that thing. So, it's $20 a bottle, probably upwards to maybe $30, depending on if it's on sale. And you know, if you're looking for a good Scotch to try or start out, and you don't want to break the bank, this one's a good one. It's Tomatin. It's called a No Age Statement Scotch. So anybody out there that's listening and likes Scotch, you should go check it out.
Okay, definitely. I might go check it out. I haven't really tried Scotches, so I might want to get into that. And I'll go ahead and it says called Tomatin.
Yeah, Tomatin. Tomatin.
Okay. So
and this one, actually, if you really are trying to get into it and you don't want something that's kind of harsh and smoky and you know, flavorful in that way, this one is for a Scotch. It's a lot more on the sweeter side. You know, there's a vanilla smell to it, but then when you taste it and you kind of put it in your mouth, then it's got a little bit more of a honey flavor, and then it kind of has a smoky aftertaste when you're finished. But I mean, it's a pretty smooth drinking Scotch for the price point. I mean, you can't beat it.
Okay, now it definitely sounds good. And for people like myself who aren't the biggest drinkers, it sounds like something that would be good for us to have something more sweeter.
Yeah.
Okay, definitely sounds good. Now, I know you're a big Green Bay Packers fan, right?
Oh, man, and huge, dude.
And
I bleed green and gold. And just real quick, the funny story about that, too, is that my daughter, my five-year-old daughter, she was about, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years old, and she was starting to learn her name. And I was sitting there changing her diaper one day, and I said, you know, Audrey, what's your last name? And she goes, Packers, baby. I'm like, my parent duties are done. I'm over. I'm out.
Definitely. You have done a good job. Now we'll
I'm a huge Packers fan. Nonetheless.
Okay, and we'll definitely talk a lot about your Packers today. But before we get into, you know, the football, do you have a favorite pro basketball team?
You know, I don't. I never. I guess growing up, I mean, I graduated high school in '96, so you know, the big teams when I was growing up were the Bulls and Michael Jordan. You know, so I was a Bulls fan growing up. Charles Barkley, you know, wherever he played, I was a huge fan of the round mound of rebound. I actually just bought his throwback Air Force 180s. I just bought them the other day. I got a jersey from him too. So I followed more players probably than I did like an actual NBA team.
Okay, no, I definitely can understand that. So we'll definitely get into football here. And right before we get into the divisional round weekend, I wanted to definitely crazy. But before we get into that, I want you to let people know exactly where they can find the I Need a Mulligan podcast.
Yeah, you can do it on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, any one of those. You just search for I Need a Mulligan, it should pop right up. We're also on Blog Talk Radio /I Need a Mulligan. And then I also do, I'm with Most Valuable Podcast Network, and they have a YouTube channel, and you can go check out the individual segments. So if you don't, you know, if you're not interested in the whole podcast, it breaks it down into segments, because I do talk about, again, you know, NFL, NBA, UFC. You know, I might talk about those all on one podcast, so they break them up into different segments if there's a certain, you know, topic that you're really interested in. So we have it over there as well.
Oh man, that's awesome. It definitely sounds good. Everybody should definitely check out the podcast. It definitely has a subscriber in me, and I'm a big fan of it. And
hey, and vice versa, Damian, man, I've been listening to your podcast as well, and I love it, dude. I'm a huge fan.
Oh, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. It means a lot to come from a fellow sports podcaster and somebody who knows sports to say that they enjoy what you do. So I definitely appreciate that. So now let's get into the divisional round weekend. The first game we had was Atlanta against Seattle. Atlanta won 36-20. Matt Ryan went 26 of 37, 338 yards, 3 TDs. He had Trevor Coleman with 11 carries and 57 yards. Devontae Freeman also had 14 carries, 45 yards and a touchdown. He also had 4 receptions and 80 yards to go along with Julio Jones having 6 receptions for 67 yards and a touchdown. For Seattle, Russell Wilson had an okay day, 17 for 30, 225 yards, 2 TDs, and 2 picks. But they couldn't run the ball at all, as their leading rusher, Thomas Rawls, only had 11 carries for 34 yards. Now, my question to you about this game, what did you think was going to happen going in, and did it match anything that happened that actually happened during the game?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was going to be a lot closer than it was. Just with the Seahawks, you know, having the 5th overall defense and the 8th passing defense in the league, I thought it would be a closer game. But the Falcons, I mean, they had a good game plan going in. You know, they had good balance. I mean, you threw out the stats. I love, and that's the one thing about your show, Damian, that I absolutely love when I'm listening to it, is that you bring the stats. You don't just you know, talk about the games. I just kind of bullshit about the games. I do sometimes. I try to bring the stats as much as I can. You know, with a real job and 2 kids under the age of 5, it's sometimes a little hard to do my research.
Yeah, I definitely understand that.
I definitely respect that. But, you know, when I was looking at this game, I thought the Falcons would win, but I thought it might be more of a, you know, 20-24, 28-24 type of a game. And, you know, I was really impressed with Matt Ryan and his ability to throw the ball against that defense. And, you know, keeping that good balanced attack. The other thing that I want to bring out here and that I was really impressed with is Matt Ryan and how he kind of stepped out to be a leader. And if you looked at, I think it was, it was very brief, but it was about the 7-minute mark, I think, in the 3rd quarter. And the Falcons were up 26-10. And they showed a brief clip of Matt Ryan with a huddle over on the sideline, and you could tell that, and obviously I'm speculating here and kind of thinking of maybe what he said, but I'm sure he was over there saying, hey, this game's not over, Seattle's a second half team, Russell Wilson can put up some points, we need to make sure that we stay focused and we finish this game. And from there on out, they were pretty consistent and they did a good job of finishing, you know, finishing off the game and playing a pretty good, you know, playing a pretty good Seahawks team, you know, with that defense, and they were pretty impressed.
Yeah, I was very impressed with Atlanta as well. I actually picked Seattle to win this game because, like you mentioned, their defense is such a high ranking going in, and I especially love what Seattle did against Detroit. They were able to run the ball so well, and that's why I was so shocked with the fact that Thomas Rawls only had 34 yards, because if I remember correctly, against Detroit, he was like over 160. And
right.
So I was like, okay, if they have that running attack ready, they can keep Atlanta off the field, which means their defense won't be as tired. And I think just because they have so much veteran leadership that has been there before, they will be able to pull out this game. But, man, I was obviously wrong. And then
and that's the thing. I mean, the Falcons' rush defense isn't that great. I mean, if you look at the stats throughout the season, I think – I want to say they were like 15th or 16th, 17th overall rushing defense for the year. So, I mean, their track record as being a run stopper wasn't there. So, that, I mean, that to me, and like you said, is very eye-opening.
Yes, it was very eye-opening. And for me, Seattle, they're always going to be there for the next maybe 4 or 5 years. But we'll see if they have reached their ceiling now. I don't know if they'll ever get back to being that Super Bowl team. If that play at the 1-yard line where they didn't give Marshawn Lynch the ball will hunt them forever.
right. Well, the other thing too, just to kind of take a maybe a little bit step backwards here, but I think it was, I don't know what week it was, but it was within like the last 3 or 4 weeks, the Packers played the Seahawks and they put up 38 points. So I'm wondering, you know, if the Falcons kind of went back and looked at that game film and kind of came up with, you know, a good game plan of how to attack that Seahawks team. You know, it's just something that I was thinking about off the top of my head there.
Now, that's a very good point. I definitely like to pay attention to things like that, to where you see effects where people can do certain things, and you know you had the personnel to do what they did. So I definitely like that as well, because I remember when Seattle played the Saints, like maybe the middle of the season, and the Saints aren't the biggest running team, but they were able to run the ball on Seattle, and I was very shocked by that. And our backup running back had like 120 yards that game. And I was like, man, I wonder if this is going to affect Seattle going forward. And a lot of teams were able to run the ball on Seattle, you know, the rest of the year. And even Atlanta, even though they have more of a running back by committee type thing, they were able to run the ball effectively to set up, you know, their passing plays and stuff like that. So Atlanta did a really good job. I got to give them their credit, even though I didn't believe in them. But
so are you a Seahawks fan then? Or
no, I'm a Saints fan.
Oh, so you are?
Yeah.
Are you from New Orleans?
Yeah, originally from New Orleans.
No, okay, this is the listeners will get a kick out of this. I'm kind of going off topic, but my wife is from New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
we actually met there.
Oh, okay.
How crazy is that? I went and worked at, you know, in between school in the summers, I went down there and worked at a summer camp at Tulane University, and that's how we met.
Oh, wow, that's dope.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I love the Saints, too. That's one of the things that, you know, I try to bring to the podcast a little bit more, and, you know, hopefully they'll be a little bit more prevalent next year so I can talk about them a little bit more because, you know, if I'm talking about the Saints and my wife's a Saints fan, you know, that's just more of an excuse to get on the microphone.
definitely. And one thing that does go together is drinking on a podcast and talking about New Orleans. That's definitely...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely great, man. Hopefully we are better next year. We definitely got to improve defensively, though.
Like, oh, jeez, man. Yeah. That's a reoccurring theme with that team, man. It's unfortunate. I mean, their offense always seems to be clicking, but their defense always seems to struggle.
Yeah, and then this year we had games where the defense showed up, and then Drew Brees had some of the worst games of his career this year.
Nuts.
Yeah, like whenever... I always tell people this. We had two games this year where our defense held the other team to 16 points, and we lost. That can't happen.
It just can't. It's like an oxymoron when it comes to the Saints, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I tell people all the time, you tell anybody the Saints gave up 16 points, you're going to say, oh, the Saints won that game. There's no way you would think the Saints lost that game. So a lot of things just got to get more consistent. We got a few more years of Breeze left, like maybe 2-3 max. So we definitely got to make sure we take advantage of that before we have to fully rebuild. So hopefully we can get a defense that's, you know, sometime, hopefully this time next year, we're talking about the Saints as well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, for the next game that was on Saturday, we had New England beat Houston 34-16. Tom Brady had kind of a rough day for Tom Brady standards. He went 18 for 38, 287 yards, 2 TDs, 2 picks. But, man, Deion Lewis, he balled out. 13 carries, 41 yards, 1 TD, 1 kick return touchdown. He also had a reception for a touchdown as well. Julian Edelman had 8 receptions for 137 yards. Chris Hogan had a good day as well with 4 receptions for 95 yards. And Brock Osweiler, he was being Brock. He went 23 for 40, 198 yards, 1 TD, and 3 picks. Now, my question for you is, do you think, because this game was close for maybe 2.5 quarters, do you think Houston showed Pittsburgh anything that they can use going forward?
Good point, and I say no. And the main reason, when I watched that game, I mean, the first thing I was thinking was, man, this is a conservative game plan. And I think Belichick kind of had in the back of his mind that I don't really want to show a lot. I know that we can beat Texans, even if it comes down to a close game. You know, I don't want to throw the kitchen sink out there and let, you know, the Steelers watch this game and maybe pick up on some tendencies. So that's really what I think it was. I think it's more of a chess match for the Patriots right now. And that's just what it looked like to me.
Okay. Now, I think Houston did have a good game plan defensively. I really like how they put their best pass rushers over the center.
Yeah.
I saw them do that a few times to where you had Merciless or Clowney over the center, which the center's not used to blocking somebody that dynamic coming at them. And they were able to get pressure on Tom Brady. And you saw Tom Brady even get frustrated at times. And they forced some turnovers from Tom Brady. He threw as many interceptions in this game as he did all season, which is crazy.
That is crazy, yeah. Well, I mean, that is. I mean, the Texans D, I mean, they're the number one overall defense, I think, throughout the season, one or two. I think their passing defense was in the top five, if I remember correctly. I don't know the exact numbers, but I know the defense is no joke.
Yeah. Nah, definitely. Their defense is really good. Unfortunately, their defense is no joke, and the offense is a joke.
There's the pun.
Yes. Oh, man, Brock Osweiler, man. And the thing is, he started off the game okay. Like, he wasn't making mistakes. And then once they got behind, you could tell he started trying to force it. And I believe that drop by Fuller really kind of got in his head. He's like, I'm Brock. I finally threw a perfect pass. You going to drop it? Like,
can't make those mistakes when I'm throwing the ball, homie.
Exactly, because I don't have too many of these in me. I don't have too many of these dime-type passes like that. So I think that really got to him. But, of course, we all knew that the Texans didn't really have a chance in this game. But it was cool to see them fight as hard as they did. But New England's going forward to play Pittsburgh, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And, well, one thing on the Brock Osweiler thing that I like to bring up, and it's one of the things that just frustrates the piss out of me when I think about the NFL. You know, you got these backup quarterbacks that they come in, you know, behind, you know, whatever quarterback it is, and they play good and they look decent. You know, Garoppolo is one of those right now, and everybody gets really high on their stock and let's trade to get them, and then they bring in someone that's a backup for another team to a certain team, and then they don't do very well. And there's a huge track record with that, and I'm curious to see. There's a lot of people out there talking about Garoppolo and the fact that, you know, he could go some places, and I'm just like, man, with the track record of backups that have been successful and then move on. I mean, it's a totally different topic here, but it just frustrates me. And Osweiler right now is a great example of that.
Yes, he's definitely a great example. I call it the Matt Flynn effect. You're definitely
the Packers. They lit shit up for you know a whole year because Aaron Rodgers was hurt, and then he went to a shitty team one. But that's exactly, you hit the nail on the head there, brother.
Yeah, so I definitely hear where you're coming from on that. Jimmy Garoppolo did look good. The thing that's interesting about that, Tom Brady's about to be 40. So when you have a quarterback, even though he looks great and he wants to play till he's 45, that wall's going to hit him eventually. And do you want to trade away Garoppolo, who looks like he can be the next guy, when Tom Brady's that old? Because now if that wall hits next year, now you're going to be SOL because you got rid of Garoppolo for some draft picks.
Yep.
And quarterbacks are not easy to come by, man. Ask Cleveland.
My wife always says, if it's brown, flush it down.
Definitely, man. It's a quarterback is not an easy thing to find. Even the Saints, man, but pre-Drew Brees, it was tough, man. It was very tough to find a quarterback, and that's why it's such a big urgency in New Orleans now to try to get this team good before Drew leaves, because we don't know the next time we'll have a great quarterback.
Yeah, you know, man.
So it's definitely something that you have to not take for granted, that you have a quarterback or a good backup. Speaking of good backups, Green Bay versus Dallas. And, you know, they got Tony Romo as their backup. Green Bay beat Dallas 34-31. Aaron Rodgers, the great and bad man that he is, went 28 for 43, 356 yards, 2 TDs, 1 pick. Ty Montgomery had 11 carries for 47 yards and 2 TDs. Jared Cook, 6 receptions for 104 yards, 1 TD. And Mason Crosby had 2 of the clutchest kicks you might ever see. Dak Prescott went 24 for 38, 302 yards, 3 TDs, 1 pick. Ezekiel Elliott had 22 carries for 125 yards. And Dez Bryant balled out, 9 receptions, 125 yards, and 2 TDs. Now, I'm going to be honest, I thought Dallas would win this game. All right?
I think most of us did.
And the reason I thought Dallas would win is because Green Bay's defense isn't the best. And I thought that they would be able to just run the rock. I expected Ezekiel Elliott to get like 40 carries. Like I'm like, they're going to run this ball down their throat and try to control the clock. Because, of course, I'm not doubting Aaron Rodgers at all. I'm like, once he gets the ball, they're going to do their thing on offense. He's going to lead them down the field. My thing was, I didn't think that Green Bay would be able to stop Dallas. And I think Dallas had it was a big penalty in the first quarter. Green Bay was up 7-3, and Dallas was driving down the field. And they had a completion, but it was called back because of a legal substitution, I believe, where they had 12 men in the huddle.
Yep.
So that was like a 25-yard completion that turned into a 15-yard penalty.
Yeah.
So I believe that stalled that drive, and then next thing you know, Green Bay is, you know, going up and down the field, and they're up 21-3. And that changes your whole game plan. Now you're scared to run the rock as much as you would want to. I think that was a big play in the game. But Dallas did a great job coming back. But of course, Aaron Rodgers being, you know, the best talent I've ever seen at the QB position, did his thing. So of course, as a Green Bay fan, were you nervous when they started coming back? Or did you think, okay, we got this?
Oh, hell yeah, I was nervous. I mean, our like you mentioned, I mean, our defense, you know, throughout the year hasn't been stellar. And, you know, we started out pretty well and then some injuries and different things like that. And you know, we've kind of been coming on late defensively. But, yeah, I definitely kind of felt it, you know, a little bit there when they were coming back. But honestly, you know, the Cowboys have never played from behind, or if they did play from behind this year, it was very rarely. I mean, I watched quite a few Cowboys games, and I don't remember them ever being down 21-3. So, you know, for the chances of them actually coming back from that type of deficit with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, I was nervous, but I wasn't all that nervous. And it was actually kind of crazy that it came down to the last play.
Yeah, no, it was a great game. Great comeback, man. And it definitely puts to rest any Tony Romo's type stuff. You know, either he's going to be a backup and be happy making his money, or he's going to be on a different team next year. But I heard an interesting theory on a certain play during the game. I was listening to The Herd, and
one of Colin Cow Herd.
I was listening to it. I'm a big fan of his show. I was listening, and
okay, cool.
One of the producers caught on to the fact that one of the plays, Aaron Rodgers didn't buckle his chin strap. I'm like, okay, he just forgot to buckle his chin strap. But he was like, no, the reason he did that is because the offensive lineman, like the play before, his chin strap broke, and he got out of the game to fix his chin strap. And he thought Aaron Rodgers was kind of taking a little shot at him.
I remember that. I don't remember the whole play or what happened, but I do remember, that's funny that you mentioned that, because I do remember a point where, you know, after that play, he had it on, and the announcer said something about it, and he made a funny gesture to the sideline where he kind of pointed and he kind of gave one of his, you know, eye squints. And I maybe there's something there. I doubt it. But I mean, yeah, because I remember that plain as day now. That's funny.
Yeah, because I didn't think anything of it. When it happened in the game, Troy Aikman was like, oh, he didn't even strap up his chin strap. And I was like, oh, okay, he just, you know, forgot to strap it up. But then when I heard, you know, what the guy said on Herd, I was like, okay, maybe something there. It's a stretch, but but it could be like a little shot. Like, okay, I'm out here, no chin strap, but you know, you're my offensive lineman. You're getting out the game because your chin strap broke.
Yeah. I will say this though, man, that the Packers right now, they're a totally different animal though than they were at the beginning of the season. I mean, their offense is clicking on all cylinders. Their timing right now in the passing game is second to none. And then they're sprinkling in enough rushes and enough of a rushing game where they're actually gaining significant yards in the rushing game. So they're keeping that defense honest. Yeah. And you saw a lot of that in the first half. Then, you know, I think the Cowboys did a good job adjustment at halftime where they kind of started bringing a little bit more pressure. You know, I don't know if you remember the first meeting when they played, but, you know, they did a good job of that front core, you know, keeping the pocket tight on Aaron Rodgers. And then, you know, the linebackers were doing a good job of taking away, you know, the short quick passes. And then once those short quick passes were done, then those linebackers were really doing a great job of moving up into those A and B gaps and making Aaron get the ball out relatively quick. And, you know, I think they started to do that again in the second half, and it kind of disrupted their timing. And I really hope the Falcons weren't watching that. Well, I mean, the Falcons defense is totally different than the Cowboys defense. But I think they did a great job of that in the second half. And then Dak, he definitely left, like you mentioned, he definitely left no doubt in the fact that the future is bright with that young man in Dallas, man. I you know, I hate to say it because I'm a Packers fan, but I mean, he looked impressive in the second half.
Yeah, definitely. He was very impressive. I loved his poise. He didn't get panicked when they were down 21-3. Also, Ezekiel Elliott, he's going to be a beast. Dude,
he took the words right out of my mouth, man.
Yeah. He's an absolute beast, man. And then he's very patient as well, which a lot of people, you know, they have a great offensive line. So a lot of people are like, oh, anybody can run behind the offensive line. It's not true. It's not true at all. You have to be patient. And his patience is what makes the offensive line look so great, or what makes us notice how great they are. Because him and, I would say, he's not as patient as Le'Veon Bell, because Le'Veon Bell's patience is at a whole different level. It's crazy. But Ezekiel Elliott, with that patience, you see the hole open up and then he just bursts through it. It's a beautiful thing to watch. And also...
Yeah, he's only a rookie, too, so that's only going to get... I mean, think about that, too. He's only a rookie. I mean, think about how scary that is, and the fact that, you know, he's going to develop even more in that category.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to get better at all the nuances of the game that he doesn't know now. So the fact that he's still raw and is this good is crazy. Crazy. Anything from this game, you did mention like Dallas' defense adding pressure. Is there anything else from this game that kind of has you worried going into Atlanta?
I don't know. I think the Packers Falcons game is kind of a whole different beast. Are we going to talk about that later on the podcast, or do you want to get into it now?
No, we'll talk about it in just a little bit.
We can talk about it a little bit later on. Honestly, the Packers are playing good. So yeah. we'll get into it a little bit later.
Okay, no problem. Let's get into the last divisional round matchup. We had Pittsburgh beat Kansas City 18-16. Ben Roethlisberger went 20-31, 224 yards and one interception. Le'Veon Bell had 30 carries for 170 yards. We had Brown with 6 receptions for 108 yards. But the MVP of the game was not one of the killer bees, but the other bee, Boswell. Went 6-6 on his field goals, so which accounted for all 18 of the Pittsburgh Steelers points. And for Kansas City, Alex Smith went 20-34, 172 yards. Yeah, Spencer Ware, who had 8 carries for only 35 yards, and Travis Kelce, who had 5 receptions for 72 yards. Now, my question to you for this game, do you think Pittsburgh won this game or Kansas City lost this game?
That's a very good point. I think the Steelers won it. I mean, that's the crazy thing about the Steelers, and literally I don't think they get enough credit for this. I don't think Tomlin gets enough credit for this. They have a knack for doing whatever they need to do to win football games. And, you know, their offense right now, they're not going to lose any games. I mean, it's probably not flashy, but at the same token, they're not going to do anything that's detrimental to the outcome of the football game. So, you know, I think that's just kind of the Steelers' mentality, man. I think, you know, they kind of grind it out and they figure out a way to win. I mean, I was surprised that they ran the ball as much as they did. I almost feel like it was kind of the same mentality that the Patriots had. They, you know, their conservative game plan, and maybe they didn't want to show the Patriots a lot in this game, and they knew they could win by, you know, just pounding the rock, and you know, maybe when they get to the Steelers game, then they, or the Patriots game, then they can figure out, you know, we can pass the ball a little bit more. But, you know, I think they do what they need to do in order to win football games.
Yeah, now Pittsburgh definitely is somebody who's our team that's always been there and knows how to get past, you know, obstacles. And they proved that in this game. And you can win a game. It's crazy. Kansas City lost this game scoring 2 touchdowns and the other team scored 0. Like, that's just...
It's nuts, man. I mean, yeah, you look at that. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane. That's, you know, we talked about eye-opening earlier. I mean, that's a fucking kick in the shorts.
Definitely. Because you think about the fact that pretty much Pittsburgh won this game with time of possession. Because it seemed like they always had the ball. I was like, when did I go to... It seemed like I go to the bathroom, can't see to get the ball, I come back, and Pittsburgh will have it again. And they were just... Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about Alex Smith, though. I mean, you know, I don't know your opinion on this, but I mean, the Chiefs seem like with him as quarterback, you know, they can be consistent throughout the year. They can put together, you know, a pretty good record. But for whatever reason, you know, the pressure of the playoffs or, you know, that different mentality. I mean, if you watch these four games over the weekend and you watch football the rest of the year, I mean, the way that the intensity and the hits and the way people just attack gaps and just different things, a whole different animal. And I don't know, you know, if the Chiefs are built to play that type of football per se. But and Alex Smith, I just don't know if he's built to mentally kind of get over that hurdle. I'm sure he'll win some playoff games, you know, as his career goes on. But I mean, it's just it's the same song and dance with him.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you because it's hard to not lose a playoff game. You have to go and win it. And with Alex Smith, seems like he's built to just not lose. Like, he's not going to lose you the game.
Right.
But is he going to win you the game? And I've seen him do it. There was a classic game some years back when he was in San Francisco against the Saints in the playoffs. I don't know if you remember it. He threw the game-winning touchdown to Vernon Davis.
I forgot about that, actually. Yeah.
And now, of course, this Kansas City, the Pittsburgh defense is probably much better than the Saints defense was at that time. But right. It was a shootout going back and forth, and he was able to pull it out. And they had some very good play calling in that game as well, because he ran a quarterback sweep at one point for like for like 30 yards.
I remember that. Yeah, you're bringing back some shitty memories, brother.
Yeah. It was hurtful. It was hurtful. But that's when people say Alex Smith can't pull out the big one, that always comes to mind. I'm like, I remember the one time he did.
Did it against the Aints.
Yeah. Definitely. It hurts so much, especially because we were really good that year. Like, we probably would have beat the Giants if we would have played them in the NFC Championship that year. Because it would have been in New Orleans, too. So I always tell people, the Giants fan, you better thank San Francisco for winning that game. Because we would have beat y'all in the Superdome.
Oh, that's funny.
But I'm with you, though. Because Alex Smith, like I said, not going to get you big plays. And Kansas City has so many really, really good players to great players on that team. You think about that defense with Houston, Poe, Peters. And on offense, you got Macklin. Travis Kelce's really good. Even, you know, Spencer Ware is even good.
Yeah, I mean, they got the pieces in place, man. They got a great foundation over there. I mean, that's why they're consistent every year.
Yeah, definitely. So, but that's when you run into that question that's coming up nowadays. When you have a quarterback that's, you know, maybe a C+, B- quarterback, it's hard to find somebody better than that. Even though you know you need somebody better than that, it's hard to find them. And what do you do when it's time to pay those guys? Like Washington, the Redskins are in that situation now. You got Kirk Cousins, who is probably, you know, a B- quarterback at best. But how are you going to do better than him? You can't go out and draft and expect that some guy coming out of college should be better than him. You're not going to find somebody in free agency unless you get Romo. So it's hard for those type of teams to get out of that rut, because now you know when I have an Andy Dalton or Alex Smith, Kirk Cousins, those type of guys, they're good enough to get me to the playoffs, but will they ever win the big game? And I don't know.
Perfect. I don't have anything to add to that. You hit the nail on the head again.
So now it's time for us to preview the conference championship games. So let's start with the first one. We got your Green Bay Packers going to the ATL to play the Falcons. And let me give just a few stats here to maybe put into perspective what we might get. Okay, so for Green Bay during the year, they averaged 368 yards per game on offense, 27 points per game, and converted 46% of their third downs. Atlanta, they gained 415 yards per game, 34 points per game, and 120 yards rushing per game. Green Bay gave up 363 yards per game, 24 points per game, and allowed a 41% third down conversion rate on defense. For Atlanta, they gave up 371 yards, 25 points per game, and allowed 42% on third downs. Now, the gist of what I'm saying is, this could be the biggest shootout in playoff history.
If you like offense, stay tuned.
Yes, definitely. Now, I'm going to go to you first. You know, I got a feeling where you're going, but... So what do you expect in this game, and what do you think the final score would be?
Okay. I think the keys to this game, in all honesty, is balance. I know both of these teams, they can get kind of pass heavy, but I think the team that kind of finds a good balance will probably be, able to win the game. You know, then on the other hand, I think it's going to be whoever has the ball last.
Yeah.
And then, the last key that I kind of have here is, which defense can find a way to disrupt one of these high power offenses. If they can figure out a way, either team, if they can figure out a way to keep the other team somewhere around that 30 point or below range, they're probably going to win the game, which is crazy to think about, right?
Yeah.
And then, the Packers, they have the second worst passing defense in the league, throughout the regular season. But I will say this, and you kind of saw it a little bit, when they played the Seahawks, you saw it a little bit when they played the Giants, and you saw it again maybe in the first half of when they played the Cowboys. And they've done a lot better job with their schemes. They're doing a good job of mixing up their secondary coverages from man to zone. And they're doing a good job of disguising where the blitzes are coming from. So, in that regard, they're kind of getting those quarterbacks to kind of get out of a rhythm. And then their rush defense has come on throughout the season. I think their rush defense is somewhere in the 8 to 10 range. So they do have a good front core, and now most of the people on their front core are healthy. So it's kind of a thing where the Packers defense, I think, is a lot better than maybe what the stats or the things that you're looking at show at this point in the season. And the Falcons, again, going back to the balance piece, they have to stay balanced. They got to, all the stats that you said, they got to keep it in that range. I think if they can run the ball somewhere between 125 to 150 yards in this game and keep that high potent offense of Aaron Rodgers off the field, that might be their best defense, actually. Their offense being able to, balance the attack and kind of doing, what you said with the Steelers did to the Chiefs, pound the rock and keep that that offense off the field. I think the Cowboys actually did a pretty decent job of that in the second half of this last week's game. But, if you're telling me that I got to pick a winner, I mean, this one's tough. Literally, if I try to take my bias out, I think this one's tough. The Packers, they just kind of, they have that feeling of when they won the Super Bowl, back in the day with Aaron Rodgers, where, they were hot at the end of the season. They kind of ran through the playoffs, and, they're just clicking. Their offense is just so good right now that it's hard to pick against them. But then, the Falcons and Ryan and that team, I really think they have something to prove. I think they made that point the way they played against the Seahawks. And I think it's a shootout. I would say, if you made me pick, I would say Packers 33-30.
Okay, Packers 33-30. I definitely can see that. For me, I think it's going, like you said, it's going to be a shootout. Whatever offense gets the ball last. But it may come down to that one defensive stop, that one defensive big play. So, they're professionals, too. Like, somebody's going to make a play on the defensive side of the ball that could change the momentum or the outcome of the game. And
So you're saying like a sack by Clay Matthews?
That could be it. That could be it.
I'm just messing.
But, like I said, it could be a sack, fumble, or interception, something like that. Like, in the Dallas game, the play before Aaron Rodgers made the great, 36-yard completion down the field to Jared Cook, that hit by Heath could have been it. That could have easily been a fumble. Turn around for that, six.
Yeah, that might have been the best. I mean, honestly, the fact that he didn't fumble that might have been even more impressive than the throw that he made on the next play.
No, that's very true, because he didn't see Duke coming at all. Like, you watch the replay, he's looking. He has no clue this guy is coming. He hit him hard, and I guess that's why the size of the hands is so important in the NFL, especially for the quarterbacks, because they can have that hand strength to be able to hold into the ball. Because if it was me, the ball would have been, you know, flying in the stands.
That's a very good point. I never really thought about it that way. That's a good point.
Yeah, so Aaron Rodgers, man, he's a beast when it comes to all aspects. And because he's so good, and Atlanta's defense isn't that good, and that's why I'm going with Green Bay, because I don't see Atlanta's defense being able to slow him down at all. And Green Bay's defense, maybe they'll do just enough to slow down Atlanta. Even though Matt Ryan is on fire right now, he has a lot of weapons. I think that you just got to go with the hot hand sometimes. You know, sometimes it's just outside of rhyme and reason, you just got to go with the hot hand. I got Green Bay winning 34-30 in this one. But it'll be a great game, I believe, especially in that dome. It's going to be rocking. You know, it's going to be the last game in the Georgia Dome.
Right, yeah.
So they're going to be ready to go, man. I think it's going to be a great game.
Yeah, that new stadium that they're building next to it, did you see some of the clips and stuff that they had on the game? I mean, they're showing it, man. That thing looks like it's going to be impressive.
Yeah, definitely going to be impressive. I just want to point out that to Atlanta fans, though, that the Saints fans had the Mercedes-Benz Superdome first before y'all got there.
My wife actually mentioned something about that. She's like, did they say Mercedes? That's New Orleans. I'm like, no, I guess they're putting it up in Atlanta, too.
Yeah, so I always mess with Atlanta fans about that. Of course, Atlanta's our big rival. So I'm like, y'all got to steal our stadium name, too? Y'all can't have y'all get your own sponsor for your stadium? But, it definitely looks impressive. And hopefully, I can't wait to see it next year, man. Now, for the next matchup, we got New England versus Pittsburgh. Classic AFC championship game right here. Just to give you a few stats going into this game, got New England, who's averaging 386 yards per game of offense, 27 points per game, and they're converting third downs at 46%. You got Pittsburgh, who's giving you 372 yards per game, averaging 25 points per game, and getting 41% on their third downs. And defensively, New England's giving up 326 yards per game, but they're shutting down the points, only giving up 15 points a game, and only allowing 36% on third down conversions. You got Pittsburgh, who's giving up 342 yards per game, 20 points, not too bad, and 41% third down conversion rate on defense. So what are the keys to this game for you, and who you got winning?
Well, if you like offense with the Packers and Falcons, and you're a defensive guy, This might be your game for defense. You know, and that's the cool thing about these championship games. I mean, you're kind of getting both ends of the spectrum here. I mean, the Packers and Falcons game might be a shootout. Patriots and Steelers game might be a, you know, another 18-16 game. But I think, again, key to the game is ball control, kind of like the Steelers did against the Chiefs. I think turnovers and special teams are something that we kind of need to watch for. You know, the Patriots, they have the third overall rushing defense in the league. And the Steelers, if you look at their overall stats throughout the season, I think they were 14 as a rushing offense. That's during the regular season. But in the playoffs, they've been run heavy. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, he looks flat out phenomenal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they're going to try to challenge that rush defense a little bit. And, you know, I think that's probably going to be where the key is. You know, can they get through that front core of the Patriots and establish that ball control like they did against the Chiefs? And then you look at their passing games. I mean, both teams are solid in the passing game, number four and number five, respectively, for passing offense throughout the season. But, you know, when you look at it here, I really think you got to go with the Patriots here with the W. They will do a good job of ball control. I think they'll shut down that Steelers run game, and then, you know, all the pressure is going to be on Ben Roethlisberger, which I guess if you look at his track record, that may not be, you know, the best way to go about things. But, you know, I think the, you know, the overall look here and what it's going to come down to is special teams. And, you know, Bill Belichick and the Patriots, they always find a way to win in the special teams game. So, you know, I'm thinking 21-17 Patriots.
Okay, 21-17. I have it 27-23. I think it's going to be a little more high scoring than people think. The thing that scares me about New England's defense, they have the great stats. But when I think about who they played this year, of course it's not their fault. They only can play who's on the schedule. But I'm trying to think, who was the best offense they played all year? Like, who? What offense they played that was legitimately like, okay, I think they could score points?
Like the. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, so for me, it might get out there and you got, you know, Ben Roethlisberger gets to cooking, Antonio Brown, you mentioned Le'Veon Bell in the running game. If that Pittsburgh offense gets to cooking and New England's defense isn't ready for that type of offense, this could be a whole different type of game. But, you know, you only could take what you've seen so far. And New England's defense has been really good so far. But it's just hard when you got, you know, you played Brock Osweiler twice and you've played against Matt Moore and Tannehill.
Yeah, I'm sitting here. I'm kind of looking at their schedule. I mean, Bills, Bengals, Ravens, Browns, Dolphins, Chiefs. I mean, they haven't played. Yeah, you know, I guess they played. Oh, shoot, I'm looking at the Steelers. Sorry. I need a mulligan. Rewind that shit. So when you look at the last few teams they played, I mean, Dolphins, Jets, Broncos, Ravens, Rams, yeah, Jets, Niners. I mean, Seahawks. I mean, the one team there. Here you go. You go back to November 13th. The one team that actually has a relatively decent quarterback in the Seahawks, they lost 31-24.
That's crazy. So the best quarterback they played all year is Russell Wilson.
at least the last five or six games there.
And so you have to think that they might not be ready for this. They might not be ready for the test that Ben Roethlisberger will be. But then again, with Pittsburgh, their defense has been relatively okay. Are they ready for the test that will be Tom Brady?
So I mean, they're a pretty consistent defense. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if they're not off the charts. They're not like the, you know, the defenses that we're used to, you know, over in Pittsburgh. But, you know, I think consistent wise, they could maybe hold their own. But that's a good point.
Yeah. So a lot of this game, I don't know what to expect because of New England's. We mentioned their schedule, and with Pittsburgh, like you said, it's a consistent defense, and they're just. You know, they're there. You know, they're like broccoli, like healthy for you. You know. Yeah, exactly. Like, they're like broccoli, but that steak's right there. You're going to eat that steak. But you're like, oh, maybe I could get this broccoli too because it is consistently good for me. But I got New England winning 27-23. I expect both games to be great. And I can't wait, man. Cannot wait. So now it's time to do a little sports trivia. This is where I challenge the guests and our dozens upon dozens of listeners to test your sports knowledge. So hopefully you're ready for these questions.
I'm going to need a mulligan, man. When I saw you sent me this, and I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. I got all sweaty. You know, I wasn't quite sure. I'm like, I don't do well on tests, man. I don't do well on tests. But I'll give it a shot. Shit.
Hey, any doubt, just go see.
All right. Well, it's multiple choice. I'm good. Yeah. Just not
this. For the first question, which active player has the most rushing yards in a single playoff game? Is it Thomas Rawls, Russell Wilson, Le'Veon Bell, or Colin Kaepernick? I'm gonna give it to you one more time. Which active player has the most rushing yards in a single playoff game? Is it Thomas Rawls, Russell Wilson, Le'Veon Bell, or Colin Kaepernick?
Bell went for 171. I would hate to think that anybody did more than that. Well, maybe Kaepernick did when he played the Packers. I'll go Bell.
You should win Kaepernick.
Was it against the Packers?
Yes, it was.
Oh, I'm a dumbass.
Yeah, Colin Kaepernick had 181 yards rushing. That was on January 12, 2013 against your Packers. I remember that game, Colin's coming out party. Man, how times have changed.
Right. That's a fucking zone read.
Now for the next question. Who holds the record for passing yards in a playoff game? Is it Drew Brees, Bernie Kosar, Andrew Luck, or Aaron Rodgers? I'll give it to you one more time. Who holds the record for passing yards in a playoff game? Drew Brees, Bernie Kosar, Andrew Luck, or Aaron Rodgers?
I'll go Mr. Statistics, and it's got to be, I would be surprised if it's not Drew Brees.
Good guess, but incorrect.
What?
Yeah. Drew Brees is second and third and like fifth and sixth.
He's not number one.
But he's not number one. Number one is Bernie Kosar, which is, shit, yeah. And for the youngins out there, the Browns did play in the playoffs at one point. And he was yes, he was the Browns quarterback back on January 3rd, 1987. He threw for 489 yards against the New York Jets.
Yes. That's a good stat, man. That's a good one. I'm glad you pulled that one out. That's cool.
Yes. I try to do a little research, man.
You're right. Damn good. Honestly, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, but that's the coolest thing about your podcast, man, with the stats and different things like that, man. Very, kudos for sure.
Oh, thanks, man. Now for the third one. Who holds the record for receiving yards in a single playoff game? Is it Steve Smith, Jerry Rice, Eric Moulds, or Calvin Johnson? I'll give it to you one more time. Who holds the record for receiving yards in a single playoff game? Steve Smith, Jerry Rice, Eric Moulds, or Calvin Johnson?
Oh, man. I'm going to go Calvin Johnson.
Good guess, but incorrect again.
Yeah, I'm going over. 0-2 and barbecue, baby.
Now, that was a very good guess. Calvin Johnson had like 221 yards against the Saints.
I thought maybe the Saints were coming up there.
Yeah, I was at that game actually, and he was he was torching us.
He went off. Somebody had more than 270 yards receiving in a playoff game. I'm curious to see with this one.
Yeah, so Calvin had 221 against the Saints, but the record is
221.
Yeah, the record is 240. Eric Moulds. And again, for you youngins, Buffalo did play in the playoffs.
I should have put two and two together. Was it with Bernie Kosar?
No, this one, Buffalo, was in 1999. I don't remember. Was Jim Kelly still quarterbacking?
You said Buffalo. I was thinking Cleveland. Jimmy, Christmas. I need another mulligan. Rewind that shit.
But with Buffalo in 1999, which was the last year they made the playoffs, January 2nd, 1999, against Miami, Eric Moulds went off with 240 yards.
Wow. Yeah. Good stuff.
Now, for question number four, which quarterback has thrown the most interceptions in a single playoff season? So not just one game, but their whole trip through the playoffs. Which quarterback has thrown the most interceptions in a playoff season? Is it Jim Kelly, Drew Bledsoe, Brett Favre, or Rich Gannon? Let me give it to you one more time. Which quarterback has thrown the most interceptions in a single playoff season? Jim Kelly, Drew Bledsoe, Brett Favre, or Rich Gannon?
Oh, man. Picking on my Packers. I would say maybe, well, geez, that's a tough one. I mean, Brett Favre was the pick-thrown machine. I would say, even though I love watching him play, I would say maybe, I mean, Jim Kelly, he was so consistent. Who was the other ones?
Drew Bledsoe or Rich Gannon?
Drew Bledsoe was a pretty consistent guy. Rich Gannon, I honestly don't really remember. Let's just go Brett Favre.
Brett Favre is a good guess, and if I didn't do the research, I probably would have guessed Favre too.
I went 0-4.
But the answer is Jim Kelly. In the 1991 playoffs, he threw 9 interceptions.
Wow.
Yes, which is crazy because it's a max.
See how many touchdowns he threw then?
I didn't see how many touchdowns he threw that year, but in 91 he threw 9 interceptions, which is crazy because it's a max of 4 games. So,
Jesus Christ, did he do it all in the Super Bowl? Is that why they lost?
Probably. But yeah, so 1991. So let me just recap the questions for you people. Number one.
How his guest went 0-4.
Question number one. Which active player has the most rushing yards in a single playoff game? The answer is Colin Kaepernick, who had 181 yards against the Green Bay Packers on January 12, 2013. Question number two. Who holds the record for passing yards in a playoff game? It's Bernie Kosar, who did it while he was playing for the Cleveland Browns back in 1987. He threw for 489 yards against the New York Jets. Question number three. Who holds the record for receiving yards in a single playoff game? It's Eric Moulds, who had 240 yards against Miami while he was playing for Buffalo. And fourth and finally, which quarterback has thrown the most interceptions in a single playoff season? It was Jim Kelly, who threw 9 interceptions during the 1991 playoffs. So definitely want to thank you for being a good sport during the sports trivia. But now it's time to take a trip down sports memory lane. And it's time for us to do our forgotten players. Forgotten players are players who may have been good but not great, or great but not recognized, or players who you may have just forgotten about who we want to remind you of. So who is your forgotten player today?
Man, I'm going straight out on a limb on this one. I was looking at a lot of different things, and I thought there's a lot of cool players out there, but the one that I wanted, I'm from Nebraska. You know, I grew up, and the Nebraska basketball team wasn't very good most of the time that I grew up. You know, it was all about Nebraska football. But this player actually came out of Nebraska, and his name is Eric Piatkowski. Do you remember him at all?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, right. So he played from, I think, 1994 to 2008. And when he played at Nebraska, he was a great player. You know, I think they made it to the NCAA tournament a couple different times while he was there. And he might be one of the, besides Teron Liu, obviously everybody knows Teron Liu, who came out of Nebraska, who's coaching for, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. Besides him, Eric Piatkowski is one of the all-time greats that ever come out of Nebraska. And he came out in 1994. He's drafted first round, 15th overall pick for the Pacers, and then they traded him over to the Clippers. And when he was with the Clippers, it was 9 seasons with the Clippers, he made 738 three-pointers, which was the franchise record at the time. His career three-point percentage was 40%. I think the highest he had in a single season was around 46%. 3 seasons, he averaged around 10 points per game. And what I want to say here about him is I think he came into the league kind of at the wrong time. You know, if you look at the nature of the game between 1994 and 2008, you know, it was a lot of one-on-one basketball. There wasn't a lot of team play or ball movement to get him, like, wide-open, good-looking threes. And it just wasn't a three-point shooting league at that time. And he still, you know, with 9 seasons, made 738 three-pointers. What I'm trying to say here is, and one more thing here is, you know, they did a lot of set plays, you know, a lot of coming off of screens. And when you're a three-point shooter and you're coming off of screens and trying to, you know, run all over the court and find that three-pointer, and that's what you're doing 98% of the time, it's hard to make shots. And the fact that he was able to do it 40% as his career was pretty impressive. So what I'm trying to say here is imagine if he played on, you know, the Spurs, this day and age, the Cavs, the Warriors, where they're still having him come off those screens, but then you have good ball movement, people taking angles, and you know they're kicking it out to him with a three-pointer. I guarantee that his career average would have been more like 46% instead of 40.
Oh man, that's a very good forgotten player, especially you.
since nobody knows about him.
No, like
the reason why I brought it up too is kind of funny. When you sent the thing, I went and watched just a little backstory here. Sorry to interrupt, but I went to watch a high school basketball game here in the Omaha metro area, and his kid actually plays on one of the teams. He's a sophomore on one of the teams here in the metro area, and I happened to see him standing over there, and I was like, is that Eric Piekowski? Like, what the hell is he doing in Omaha, Nebraska still? And then you sent that, and I was like, man, I got to talk about him on the podcast. That'd be cool.
No, that's definitely great. It's perfect timing. Definitely. Right. There's a lot of players that you think about from, you know, back 90s, early 2000s. If they played today, man, they would make so much more money because they were three-point shooters at the wrong time.
Right, and exactly.
You think about a guy like a Detlef Strempf.
Oh.
Like, if he played today, he'd probably get $20 million a year. So there's so many players like that who probably look at these players today and who they probably were better than. And they're right. Like, they're like, man, if I just was born a few years later. Crazy. Now, for my forgotten player, I went football. My forgotten player is Chris Chandler. You guys may remember Chris Chandler. He was a quarterback. He was a 76th overall pick in the 76th overall pick in the draft, third round by the Indianapolis Colts out of the University of Washington. I want to say in 1987. He played 17 seasons in the NFL for the Colts, Cardinals, Rams, Oilers, Falcons, and Bears. So he definitely moved around a lot. He finished his career with 28,484 passing yards, 170 touchdowns, 146 interceptions, a 58% completion rate, which today is kind of garbage, but it was probably pretty good for back then. His best seasons, of course, came in Atlanta, where in 1998 he helped lead Atlanta to the Super Bowl. Where that year, you remember Jamal Anderson doing the 30 bird dance and everything?
Yeah.
So Chris Chandler was the quarterback back then. Made a Pro Bowl two times. His best season, like I said, was 98, where he had 3,154 yards passing on 58% completion rate, 25 touchdowns, and 12 interceptions. So I want to give a big shout-out to Chris Chandler and Eric. How you pronounce his last name one more time?
Eric Piekowski.
That's a forgotten player today. So, of course, I got to thank you, TK, for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, man. I had a great time, dude. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Where can people find TK Goldsmith on social media?
Yeah, it's TKC Goldsmith on Twitter. Again, that's TKC Goldsmith on Twitter. We have a Facebook page. It's I Need a Mulligan Podcast. You can go check it out there. And then, again, any of the episodes, you can go check us out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. And then we're also on Blog Talk Radio.
You guys heard them. Please go check it out. It's a great show. Like I said, you're going to find the best in alcohol and sports. How can you how can you beat that? So definitely go check out I Need a Mulligan. Again, I want to thank you guys for listening to Real Sports Talk for the Real Sports Fan, and we'll see you next week. Peace.